This is August 29th, Socorro, New Mexico. We're having a session with Bartholomew.
There is a tradition that in order to become enlightened, one must sit at the feet of an incarnate guru. Would you, Bartholomew, comment on this?
If you can find an enlightened master, then by all means, take yourself to his or her feet and place yourself there and learn everything there is to learn. By all means, by all means. The problem is simply this. There are millions of people on the earth plane. There are millions upon billions of people on the earth plane. To find a master who is truly, fully, completely, totally enlightened is not an easy task. And then the problem is that when you find one who claims to be enlightened, can you, with all assurance, know that this is a true statement? So if you feel yearning toward that, and if you feel someone ablaze in your heart that you feel led to, if you within your being feel inspired by and feel led to follow in the path of someone on the earth plane, my friend, sell everything and go. But if that is not the case for you, if there is no such person in your world, to leave everything behind and wander, where would you go? How do you go? What do you begin with? Where? The tradition is to go to India. How many hundreds and thousands of Americans, Englishmen, Frenchmen, everywhere, have gone to India only to get dysentery in return? It is not that there are not masters. It is that they are not easily found. And it is, if you feel this, if you find one, then I absolutely say, go. Go. But in the absence of such a person, to say that enlightenment is not possible, I would like to tell you something. With all the greatest respect to all of those who have come before and who have said these many things, the fact is this. There is only one thing needful, only one thing needful for your freedom. One thing. That is to hear the fact that freedom is possible for you and to be so immersed in the desire for that freedom that you give your life to it. And that is the precondition. And you could go to an enlightened master without that precondition and you could sit at his feet for his and your entire lifetime and there would be no freedom possible for you. It has nothing to do with the form in front of you, my friends. I will agree with you. It would be wonderful if there were millions of masters awash here on the earth, excuse me, alight on the earth plane. It would be wonderful, but it is not the case. It is not the case. I will tell you something. The writer of Mahayoga, if I'm not mistaken, is Ramana Maharshi. Is that correct?
About him.
Look carefully at the Maharshi's teaching. Because you will find that he states that when he has left body form, where was he to go? And it is a proven fact that many, many, many disciples who never knew the Master Maharshi when he was alive have come to see him either in a trance state or in a dream state or in their awareness in some way, absolutely knowing without question that he was present in their force field, and they have come to know absolutely that. So, I feel we must go by the experience of those people. I state, with all the belief that I can tell you, that it is not going to a human form that brings you freedom, but going within your own form with such a yearning, with such a desire, with such an overwhelming determination to find it so that you do find it so, and that is the only criteria. And the Maharshi himself, for those of you who feel so inclined, is available. He has gone nowhere. Turn your focus, turn your power, turn your desire to him, and he will serve you. As he served them, he will serve you. It is the fact. It is not a loaded debt, my friend. The divine wisdom does not say, I tell you, you can have freedom, and then give you an impossible situation, which is to find a master to teach you, to lead you thus. What kind of a parent is it that would say such a thing to a child? It is not possible within the realm of kindness. It isn't possible. Would you treat someone like that? Don't you understand? I understand the tradition that comes out of, but I also know the overwhelming number of cases that belie the fact. The masters, the avatars, the enlightened ones are available now. If they were available ever, they are available now. It is only your preconceived idea that they are not, that keeps them out of your frame of understanding.
This would apply also to the Christ, the Buddha, and others.
Every great, and for those of you who don't feel drawn, even that isn't necessary. You see, again, the problem is not finding someone to lead you. The problem is finding out that you want to go there. The minute you find out that you want freedom, there will be somebody to take you there. There will be. That is not something you have to worry about. You have to worry about your desire, because the problem is, my dearest friends, most of you don't really desire it. You want to desire it. Yes, I agree with you. You want to, but the fact is that you don't. What you really want is, well, shall we name them? There's a long list of what you really want. Because the fact is absolutely true that if this is what you really wanted, it would be accomplished. It would be accomplished. You know, it isn't that it takes years and years and years to reach freedom. It takes years and years and years to want freedom. And to say, this I will give all for. This all. Take it. And then spend every moment of your day and stay up in the night, pounding away, always going within, ever turning within. How many of you do that? So, I realize that the problem is to get people to the place where they want what they think they want. That's all of this is for, is to encourage you to want, without exception, enlightenment, freedom, God, I don't care, name it. That is the problem. Once it is accomplished, it is finished. But until it is accomplished, we have to go through all of the rituals of trying to encourage you, of trying to remind you, of saying yet again and yet again. What does a master, if you could sit at the feet of Ramana Maharshi, what is it that you would get from him? He cannot reach out and enlighten you, but there is one thing he could do. He could say, look at me. Look at me. I am the proof that it can be done. And I would like to share with you what I have done. If I can do it, you can do it. And I would like to tell you that it exists, because that is part of the problem. Because humans yearn so much for it, but yet part of their, you know, the egotistical mind says, it's all nonsense, you know. It's really all nonsense, you know. There really isn't any such thing, you know. There really isn't. So you might as well take all you can out of life, because you know there really isn't any such thing. You see, constantly going on the one hand is this desire, and constantly going on the other is this repetitive statement of, it really isn't true, you know. Because if you were to take a poll on this block, would they really say that freedom was possible? Would they really say that? The world tells you one thing. Your yearning tells you another. And if you are used to listening to the world, then you will be discouraged and fall back. But if you can stop listening to the world, if you can stop saying, world, I want you to approve of me, world, I want you to help me, world, cut yourself off. I don't mean remove yourself from the world. I mean, in your being, say, the world will not provide the answer. I'm stuck. I'm on my own. It's me or nothing. And it is true. It is you or nothing. The Christ himself could sit here and could do nothing more than radiate out the wisdom, and then you'd have to go home and do your homework. It is ever thus. It is ever thus. How do you increase your desire to want this above all things? I think this is a very legitimate question. And I find two answers. One is mundane, totally mundane. Since so much of what you do is of the mind, and since so much of your belief structure rests on the written word, whether you know it or not, it is my suggestion that to whatever extent you have free time, instead of watching the eternal Western mandala, the television, that you might spend that time immersing yourself in what I call the literature of the avatars, which means the writings of those who have found it, who have searched, who have found, who have become that. And in reading of their success stories, if you will, you will become stronger and more encouraged. It's better than science fiction. Because you need to become encouraged. This is all we're trying to do, is become encouraged. That's it. And that is one way of becoming encouraged. And the other way is just plain hard work, which is just to take the statement that you are not who you think you are and decide to prove it to yourself for truth or for false. Never believe anything anyone says, whoever they might be, unless you can prove within your being that it is true. Until that moment, my friends, hold it as a hypothesis and nothing more. Not me, not anyone, ever, ever. No one. But if you feel drawn to respond to that statement, if something in you says, I want to try for this, then try for it. But do not believe, I do not believe in faith. Excuse me. I do not believe in faith. Faith is a product of experience and comes after you have experienced something, not before. If you say, I believe in something, I have faith in Bartholomew, what nonsense is that? I don't want any of your faith. I want your doubt. I want your doubt. That's what I want from you, not faith. What good is faith? Then you prattle all this wind on these tapes, and what point? The only thing that is going to transform you is your own experience, and my words will not do it, my presence will not do it, you have to do it. Please, no faith. No faith in me. I would prefer to have your argument. I would prefer to have your doubts. I would prefer to fight with you in a wondrous grappling. That is what I would like. But mealy-mouthed faith, I don't want any part of it. Because if you tell me you believe, if you have faith, do you know what this does? This means that you already believe, therefore you have nothing to do, and I say hogwash. Faith comes after experience. How can you say, I have faith in you? What does this mean, I have faith in you? The only way you can have faith in anyone is, do you follow what they do? Do they prove out? If you take the same medicine for 20 years and it's supposed to do make your hair grow and your hair never grows, do you then say, I have faith in this? Yes. You know what? Humans do it. They go on and on saying, I have faith, I have faith, I have faith, and nothing's changed and nothing's happening. And I realize I stand against the religions of the world, certainly the Western religion, which says you have to have faith first, but I will tell you this. I do not see the point in that. I see very much the point in saying, I will try it. And I think that's what they mean when they say faith. I will give it a try. Yes, give it a try. And then if I prove false, then you come to me. And then we grapple. And great fun it will be. No faith, my friends. No faith followers, no religions, no cults, no beliefs, no dogmas, no scriptures, no structure, nothing. There's only one structure, and that is your own experience. And if you can find in your own experience the truth of what I say, then you don't have to listen to any of this wind anymore. Ever. And that is what I think faith is all about. After the fact, not before. Faith puts you to sleep. If you can go around all day saying, oh, I believe in God, I believe in God, I believe in God, and that's all that happens, is just believing, believing, if it doesn't transfuse your life, if it doesn't change your life, if it doesn't change you, if nothing is different, if you still go around fueling and whiling and feeling very sorry for yourself and being really nasty to the neighbor's dog and all of this type of thing, of what good is just going around saying, I believe in God, I believe in God? The person who really believes doesn't have to say a word. You don't go around, I believe I exist, I believe I exist, I believe I exist. You know you exist, therefore it isn't a question. We don't discuss it because you know who you are. You exist. You do not belabor that. But I believe in God, I believe in God. There's only one way you can believe in God, and that is if you have experienced the power of what you call God. Then you can know and not need to speak, because you will be knowing God is. And you will not say, I believe in God, because the moment that you are aware of the presence of God, you will know something instantly. There is no you to say, I believe in God. I believe in God postulates two, you and God. That is not knowledge. That is not wisdom. That states there are two, and there's only one. You can have the most lofty vision in the world, but it's still separate from you, and it will dissolve. I have never heard of anyone having a vision that continued the rest of their life, unless they die instantly after the vision. And what usually happens is you have a wondrous vision that fills you with wonder, and then it leaves. And then you spend years trying to get the vision back. And that's not the point of vision.
Is that what some of these people who claim to have been born again Christians feel, or is that something, a different phenomenon?
It's very hard for me to speak in a blanket about that phenomenon, my friend, because in some of the cases it's absolutely bona fide. Let us be very frank. Some of those people, with their tremendous push and desire for oneness, have fallen in and become immersed in the presence, absolutely. But then there are others that have not, who have touched on either, you see, I must go back to a statement that perhaps is not very, very nice to say, but I do feel it is a fair statement to make, that humans are very naive when it comes to the spiritual world. The first thing is, you say, if I cannot see it, it doesn't exist. And the minute you say that, we are finished. We are finished. How can I commune with you when you say, if I cannot see, I cannot believe? That one premise has ended our communing, and it certainly has ended any of the merging with all of the other wonders that are possible to you. If that is your criteria, you're in trouble. Because many of the things that you are going to experience, you will never see, but you will feel them. They will move through you with such power and such amazing dynamic extension that you will know beyond doubt that they are real. Now, the problem comes in very emotionally oriented religious groups, not only the born again, they're everywhere. I mean, not born again, but many religions, is this. If you agitate the emotional body enough by crying and weeping and wanting and lamenting and so forth, you are going to have a movement of the emotional body, and it's going to feel wonderful. And it is very easy, unless you know what you're doing, to confuse yourself and think that, do you understand, that power now that is moving through you, which is the emotional body in wonderful rapid gyration, is indeed the divine self. But I want to tell you how to tell the difference, and it's very simple. If you come out of it and feel yourself to be one iota better than anyone else, then it was not the divine. It could not be the divine. It is a wondrous vision right from your ego. And do not be misled. Your ego can project the most wonderful visions in the world for you. Desire a vision enough, and your ego will produce it for you. Why not? It produces everything else. Why not that? And this, my friends, is why all of the books say, do not look for visions, because most of those visions, instead of being from another realm are usually right out of your mind, projected right on your own inner screen, and you see it and you say, wonderful, look, I've been visited by God or Christ or whatever, and how wonderfully bloated. If you feel the slightest bit bloated, I don't mean ecstatic, you will feel ecstatic, oh yes, but if you feel bloated, if you feel better then, if you start going around like this, with your shoulders feeling very good about yourself, understand very clearly what it is you have experienced, and it has nothing to do with divine energy. It is a projection right out of your own ego, and you can do it. But if you come out of it filled with awe, and filled with a feeling of total submission and humility, when that is what you feel, then know that what you have seen was real. But be on the watch. Be on the watch for the after effects. That is where the answer lies. Much of it, my friend, is the emotional body. You can get the same response through being madly in love. If you're madly in love, the same kind of emotional vibration is set up. And it feels wonderful. But it doesn't last. Unfortunately, it doesn't last. Are there any questions? Yes.
To speak on the subject of the Antichrist, which has been discussed in various recent books.
I know. No, there's nothing wrong with your tape recorder, whoever's listening to this tape. It is simply that I am pondering deep within the vastness as how to respond to this question. I think I will start by saying that I feel it a great mistake for mankind to assume that any of these events are written in granite and cannot be changed. I'm not avoiding the question. I'm simply trying to place it in a reference that makes sense. And therefore, knowing that things can be changed by you, then we come to the question of the Antichrist. And from that position, I must state that it is a very real possibility that such a person will move into the earth plane, will be able to usurp power, and will be able to create a great deal of difficulty. But even if that is so, and even if it does happen, my answer is still this. It doesn't matter. And the reason that it doesn't matter is those who are going to fall into that trap will learn a tremendous amount about misuse of power that will be greatly helpful. Those who do not fall into that trap will have not fallen in because of their own inner understanding and their own groundedness within their being, so that they will be able to stand and look. Even if it should happen, it will be a tremendous learning experience. Understand this, my friends. Anything that happens is going to be a learning experience. You will either learn from it and say, I understand, or you will run and hide and say, I won't face it, I won't face it, I won't face it. It is, you are either one or the other. You will either face fearlessly your own limitations of falling into such a situation, or you will run from your own truth. It is who you are that will be very easily seen. Don't you understand? When the power of so-called darkness builds to such a point, you are going to be able to see clearly. And what you are going to see is where your belief structure lies. And this is why, my friends, one of the things, I will tell you frankly, one of the things that anyone who speaks for the divine is going to be saying in the next 20 years is this: do not trust without discrimination. Do not trust without discrimination. Do not. Because if you can hold that in your wisdom and move out of that, you will not fall prone. Because you will just say, all right, another voice on the wind, fine, I'll test it out. And when you test out such things and they do not happen, then you know that they are false. Do you understand? You have to be the laboratory for this kind of thing. And the more of you who can be that laboratory, who can move into your being and become aware that you make the choices, the more you can do this, the less power can be generated by any troublemaker, whoever they might be. I do not see anything as totally negative. I see some difficult challenges ahead, yes. But remember this: when the difficulties are at maximum, so is the opportunity for freedom. It cannot be otherwise. It cannot be otherwise. And if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. Have I answered the question? Are there other questions?
Yes, the question is, would you put into words your concept of freedom?
Well, first of all, it is not a concept. It is the experience that perhaps could be likened unto having been in a room with no windows and a locked door, and suddenly believing that this locked room was the entire totality, not only of your being, but of the entire existence of all things. And then in one instant in time, all of the walls fall, and you find yourself on the top of a vast mesa with the whole world and all the heavens before you. And you look and you say, oh yes, I knew it all the time. I remember. No wall, endless distance, no limitations, no concept, no construct, nothing. The flood of life is everywhere. The upliftment of your own being is total. The word bliss must be brought out because that is what you will feel. But at the same time, the wonderful naturalness of it will be present. You will not say, oh my goodness. You will say, oh, right, I remember, right. How could I have forgotten? And then you will go back to eating your dinner. Do you see the naturalness of it? Utterly, wondrously, totally, completely natural. Does that answer?
That's why it's been called the natural state.
Exactly, my friend. Exactly. It is the natural state. And all other states, my friends, are unnatural. Totally, totally unnatural.
Well, this back to nature is really a good thing.
Well, let's talk about that, my friend. I know you meant it in a humorous tone, and I appreciate it, but let us speak about that. You know, one of the things that I do believe is important about the back to nature feeling is that more and more people are becoming awakened to the fact that they have something to learn from nature. Because you see, God is not hidden from you. God is in nature. God is everywhere. He is not hiding. It is you that have your head in the sand. But even if you were to open your eyes in the sand, you would still find him. because he is present in the sand. The problem is simply that you have become so unnatural in your lives, that you have moved so far to the other side, that you have to make this tremendous effort to pull you back into the naturalness of things. I think it is a great mistake to live an unnatural life. A great mistake. Because the rhythms and the wonder of the natural ways of all that's around you serve as a reminder. Just as the books that you read will be a reminder, so will the life that you live. You open your door and nature is there. You will be reminded of the naturalness. You cannot escape it quite so easily. And that is really what I'm asking, is for you to structure your lives to such an extent that you will not forget as often as you might. That is really the only thing that I can say. What kind of a life should you lead? A life that will be as close to reminding you as many moments as possible. How is that meaningful to you? Whatever way is meaningful, do it, please, to remind you. One of the reasons that many people have pictures all over the walls is so that they can be reminded. Look at the pictures that you have. They tell you something. What is it you wish to be reminded of? Because pictures do remind you. Be aware of that. Yes, they are gimmicks. I agree with you. But my friends, let us not be so elevated that we cannot stoop to a gimmick that works. Let us do what works. Let us not be concerned with whether it is, you know, the most pure and refined form. If you have a picture on your wall of a wonderful, enlightened being and you walk by, if you can condition yourself, every time you go by, you will remember. But the problem is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, after you've put these up all over your walls, then they might as well be not there. Because you walk and you don't remember. Because you walk and you don't see. Because you walk and you do not respond. You simply walk. And the reason you don't respond is you're not here. You're not walking. Your feet are walking. Your body is moving. And your mind is thinking. And that's where you are in your mind. Think, 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 think. You're not walking. You're not participating. If you were, you would see. You would know. You would be one with the surroundings. And then if your reminders are there, you will be reminded. But you're asleep. Sleepwalking. One foot after the other. You hope that the body will get where you're going, but the whole time your mind is thinking, now let me see, what did I do and what should I have done and did I do this and I should have mailed those letters and I wonder what she said, and the mind goes on and your feet walk, 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 and you're not there. You're just not there. So all of the reminders in the world are not going to be of any help to you because you're not awake to watch. So once you put the reminders up, then please remind yourself to stay awake so that you can see them. Otherwise, you will simply sleepwalk. This is why most people deeply on the path begin to accumulate around them things that will remind them. They know it isn't the answer. They know that is not the answer. Well, they know. But I do salute the effort. And to those who save graven images, throw them down, and so no statues, and no pictures, and no candles, and no incense, and so fine. If you are so refined, then take everything off your wall and remind yourself of the vastness because there's nothing there. I don't care what you do, but do something. Take all of your pictures down, put them under the bed. Remember, when you see that white wall, the vastness. Yes.
After you've taken this step, one wonders, what's the next step? When people feel pain inside, they respond by accumulating on the material plane, and this brings more pain.
Do you know why? Let me tell you something, my very dear friend, and I'm grateful for your question. A sure sign that your ego is getting scared is when you go out and start to accumulate. It is the natural movement of the ego to identify itself with accumulation of one kind or another. And when your ego becomes to be frightened, when it senses that something real is going on, that you are indeed serious and no longer playing, that you are no longer belonging to a religion but trying to be totally religious within your being, your ego is going to be afraid. And the first thing you're going to do is buy something. Believe me. The ego lives off of possessions of one kind or another. For those of you who are, what shall I use the phrase? For those of you who are collectors of people, you will go out and collect more people. For those of you who are collectors of objects, you will collect objects. For those of you who are collectors of thoughts, you will become more intellectual. Whatever your way of collecting is, you will begin to do it more rapidly. And that, to me, my friend, is a sure sign that your ego is becoming upset. You see, as long as you belong to a religion and are not religious, the ego will let you go. You can go to all the churches, all the temples, that's fine, as long as you're not really getting religious. But the minute you start going within your being and becoming serious about freedom, your ego has every reason to be afraid. And if you even begin to move into a state of love, then your ego is really terrified. Because it is a clear fact that the closest and quickest way to freedom is through love. And when you find that you are loving, not a person, but just in a state of love, and move more and more into ever-encompassing, ever-extending states of love, your ego is going to be terrified. Because that is the one thing that the ego knows will defeat it. Up until the last, the way of the mind can be devious, and you can go on for lifetimes. But the way of the heart is so simple, so totally simple, that when you begin to love and the flood begins, the ego begins to tremble. And for most people as beautiful as you, it will try to tempt you with as many wonderful men as it possibly could. Do you understand?
Right. Do you want me to rephrase the question? I'm not sure I can. How does the aspirant deal with the energy centers below the navel? And especially when there are times when the aspirant does not seem to be focused there.
It's hard. It's hard. All right.
But you can feel totally wrong. Not with this subject, and someone else will make you feel bad about it.
My friend, you are not going to win a popularity contest going for freedom. You are not going to be surrounded with admirers if you go for freedom. You may even find yourself alone. What you are saying is, if I hear you correctly, it seems that there is a natural time and a natural movement when one drops away from the sexual desires that one had or that others expect one to have. And in your society, my friend, that is very difficult, because the first thing that they tell you is that there is something wrong with you. That indeed, it is only from your childhood that you're having this problem. Or perhaps it is that you just are not sexually open. I mean, I have heard all of the dialogue. They will try in whatever way to make you feel that there's something wrong with you. Now, if none of that works, then the last line is, but it is my need and you should fulfill it. And that is up to you. It is possible to fulfill other people's sexual desires and not be moving the sexual energy. It is possible.
It seems to be the fact that if one has children, then that leads to other needs and desires. You have to have a house, you have to have furniture, you have to have cars, and so on.
And then that's what life is.
That's right. Is that what you want? Then don't do it. Then don't do it. Then don't do it. You are not on this planet to have children. You are not on this planet to get married. You are not on this planet to have sexual intercourse. You are on this planet to get free. And that is why you're here. And if you do not feel driven to do any of the above, then do not do them. And if people cannot understand you, then simply hope that somebody will come along that will understand. And if not, then you have to stay by yourself. But I repeat where I began. You are not going to be the most popular person in this town if you are going for freedom with all of your being. This is why ASHRAM started in the first place. Because people got to that point and they wanted to stop being harassed. And they said, somebody take me in because I don't want to be harassed anymore. Men and women. So ASHRAMs began. They've come a long way from that. But that's how they began. A safe refuge where people could give their all to trying to find freedom. And they weren't having to worry about any of those things. The world no longer tolerates such things. The question is going for freedom when it means that others are supporting you, which an ashram situation is, a selfish thing? The fact remains, in my observation, the people that help this planet the most are the ones that are going for freedom the hardest. Number one. Number two, and I must state this very frankly, I do not think that today ashrams are the answer, except in rare cases. I do not think you have to go out of your own life. The thing that you have to renounce is not possessions and say, I'm leaving all my possessions behind. You are still saying, there's me and there's my possessions. You can leave them all behind and you'll take them all with you. 25 years later, somebody will say, well, hello, and you'll say, yes, did you know I renounced all my possessions 25 years ago? They're still there. They haven't left you. They're still crowding around you, chattering in your brain. Renunciation is an inward thing. What it means is dropping the desire for. Dropping the desire for possession of any kind. And this leads me into something that I wanted to speak of, which is this. It is possible. It is very possible to keep reminding yourself that you have nothing. That you have nothing. Nothing is yours. There is a way to approach the Godhead that takes this in consideration, which is this. You decide in your mind to make a thrust for the knowledge that nothing that you have belongs to you. Nothing. That includes your body. That includes your wife. That includes your husband. That includes your car, your money, your children, whatever, whatever, whatever. Nothing belongs to you. It all belongs to the vast oneness, and you are simply participating in it. And when you get that kind of an awareness burning within you that you own nothing, and every time you touch something that's considered yours, you remind yourself, no, not, no, not. And every time you feel yourself getting jealous because the wife is talking too much to that handsome man in the corner, you say, no, not my wife anyway, not my. You have to make some kind of effort to start breaking the hypnosis, and the hypnosis says, you own things. Who owns it? Please show me what you own. Who owns it? This body owns it? How can this body own anything? What are we talking about? You have a certain accumulation around you. Yes, I see them. To say that you own them, what does this mean? Someone can walk in and take it when you're out to work. Who owns it? You don't own anything, and you certainly don't own people. Period. So, if this appeals to you, it is possible to use this as a thrust for freedom, to keep reminding yourself on the deepest awareness in your being, not mine, not mine, not mine. And pretty soon, when you start saying not mine, pretty soon you will find yourself saying not I, not I, not I. Because if you don't own anything, then you're nothing. I repeat, the hallmark of the ego is that you possess something. Please listen very carefully. The hallmark of the ego is that you possess something. Talent, intelligence, beauty, money, prestige, power, all of those are hallmarks of your ego. And if you can begin to cut the ground away carefully, not mine, not mine, not mine, somehow things start to loosen up, really loosen up, and things start to not matter so much. You don't care so much, not in the sense that you're not compassionate, but you don't hang on. Not mine. Because eventually, when you really come to know that you own nothing, then the question will arise in you, well, if I own nothing, who am I? If I own nothing, including body, including mine, then who am I? You see, eventually we must come full circle and stand in that spot once again and address the deepest question, and it will come. You lose the my question, and pretty soon you start losing the I. Do you understand? Have I made that clear? Yes. Is that clear? And the only way to do it is to take a gimmick. I understand. Please don't be above gimmicks, unless you are already so close to freedom that you don't need them. And then please don't listen to me either, because in the last I am nothing more than a gimmick. Try it. Please try it. Those of you who feel drawn, try it. Everything that you touch, that you think is yours, keep saying, no, not mine. Not mine. And pretty soon, let's not just do it with physical things, because really, those aren't quite so close to your heart, are they? But how about emotional? People that are yours. Or how about these ideas that are yours? These are my ideas. These are mine. Uh-huh. Good. Good for you. Each time you say that, your ego just gets a little fatter. A little pudgier around the middle. Just a little pudgier. And this has been going on for years and years, and your ego is very, very pudgy. Because you see, it owns so many things. And everything that you own is a wonderful buffer. Because the more you accumulate, the more sure your ego is that it really exists. Because your ego exists through your possessions, material, emotional, and mental. Try it and see if I do not tell you the truth. Start disowning all of your things, your emotions, your good ones and your bad ones. Please don't give away all your good ones. Keep all your bad ones. Your thoughts and all possessions. I don't mean give things away. You can do that if you want to, but I don't really see any point. If it's still yours and you're giving it away, then we've done nothing. Nothing has been accomplished. But if in your mind you release, 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 let it go, let it go, let it go, it's not mine, it's not. And if you can begin to get that kind of consciousness, do you understand what I'm driving at? If you can continuously remind yourself of the illusion of ownership of anything, you're going to begin to let loose. And one day you're going to be sitting in your chair, and if you don't own anything, then it will become very poignantly arising in your being, well, if I own nothing, no thoughts, no emotions, no things, then what am I? If I am not all of that, then what am I? It must arise. And in that moment, you know. Cut away everything. What is it? The nete nete, the not this, not this. It's the same thing. The Buddhists have been doing it for centuries. Not this, not this. But please don't stop with the material plane, because I think it's easier to give away a tape recorder than it is to give away a lover.
What about a concept? Isn't that terribly hard to give away? I was
Try
just thinking,
it.
The concept of separation that we all carry around with us would be one of the hardest.
Of course.
Things to give
Absolutely,
away.
My friend. Absolutely. But try it. You don't start with that unless you have tremendous let-go-ness. Those of you who possess tremendous let-go-ness, start with that one, because that's where you'll end. Those of you who have less of it, start with something simple. Because you see, again, we have to go back to a process. It is a process of letting go this, this, and yet again this, until there's nothing left. And when there's no thing left, then all is there. And the last thing to go is the concept of separation. But it will come. Please, don't believe in me. Try it. Try it. Try it. It's something you can do constantly, because things are always there, either thoughts or emotions or material possessions. They're always around you. Do you like your separation?
I'm beginning to enjoy it.
Then keep it. Keep it. Please, don't give away anything that you want. I'm only speaking to those who don't want it. If you enjoy the separation, then by all means, 100% enjoy it. Totally. Boldly. Dynamically. Stay awake in your enjoyment and you will get to the same place. What I am suggesting is just one of many, many gimmicks. Please understand, this is not the way. There is no the way. There's something, a suggestion. Some will respond, some will not. I'm just trying. Find your way and go with it. And good luck. Yes.
Is this renunciation more a matter of an attitude than some physical act? Or is it something that we have to work with within ourselves rather than outwardly?
Look, find out. Okay? Find out. You will find that in the trying comes the knowing how. It is a promise. In the trying comes the knowing how. Do you understand? That when you begin, you will see the way. And for everyone, it will be a little different. So if I speak in a certain way, then I will have all these robots trying to follow my words, and I don't want that. I want spontaneous experimentation. And that will show you the way. And it is my promise. When you begin to do it in your own way, in your own deep, inner way, you will find your own way for it. And then you will use it or not use it. You will either share or you will do whatever it is necessary. But you will know. For some of them, one thing is possible. For others, others. There is no one way. There is your wonderfully dynamic, creative way to deal with it. And it can be done. Try it. You'll see. It opens of its own. It will open and show you. It is true. The way does show the way. It has always been right. And you cannot know unless you start walking. Unless you start trying. And then it seems to almost take care of itself. And when you put one foot forward, you know what you have to do next. You do not know what you have to do 6 steps forward. You only know the next one. And each time you try, you will understand more and more of what I'm talking about. Other questions?
You spoke once of the fact that that does not exist.
Yes, my friend.
You spoke of the Antichrist just a little while ago.
Yes. I don't see him as bad. May I tell you? I'm going to say something that you may or may not believe. But it is a statement of truth. When anyone views anything from the perception of the divine, you do not see limitation. You do not see what you call evil. It isn't that it is ignored. You simply can't see it. So, if the Antichrist were to stand here, I could not see the evil that you talk about. I would see only one thing. An asleep entity struggling to awaken, misusing power to limit himself and others in the process. And the response would be compassion. No judgment, simply compassion. And they say, but look at the horrors he has wrought. And I say, I'm sorry. I cannot see that. I can only see pain, crying for understanding. And that is all I can see, and that is all I can respond to. I do not believe in evil. I believe in energy that has been misused. I believe in that. But far more than that, I believe in divine power, and that is what I see, because that is what I believe. You see what you believe. Understand clearly. You see what you believe. It is your vision that creates your world. If your vision has no belief in evil, you will not see it. You will not see it.
Is that why two people can go through the same experience and one person will just have a terrible time, you know, and just be fighting off all this? Other person will just go right through it and won't even if they see it. And yet they've gone through the same so-called experience.
Look, the thing that you have to get a hold of is that I'm not trying to change the world, I'm trying to change your way of seeing. And I would suggest to all of you, instead of trying to change your world, please try and change your way of seeing. That is something you can change. You cannot change this world, my friends, but you can change your way of vision. And when you change the way you see things, that world changes. You see, the world looks very different to someone who's afraid and someone who isn't. To someone who's afraid, there's fear lurking everywhere. To someone who isn't, there's nothing but wondrous accepting and moving and flowing through the flow of life, because there's no fear. But if you're afraid, then everything becomes fearful. Or everything has the potentiality to become fearful. Every relationship harbors in it the fear of loss. Every child harbors in it the fear of death. Every encounter harbors in it the fear of rejection. Every possession, the fear of loss. Fear. But someone who has no fear will not perceive that way. And you tell me that it's not possible, and I tell you, try it. The very fact is, it is here, in the vision, in the head, in the vision, that the problem arises, not in the world. Someone can yell and scream and be just frightfully rude, and one person will just get terribly upset, and the other will say, poor thing. Poor thing. I wonder what went wrong this morning. And just walk away, totally free of it. And the other one will rumble around for weeks and weeks and weeks. How dare they? That is terrible. I'm so infuriated. And do their best to get back. Whenever you find an emotion gripping you so it just takes over your mind, understand your ego is having a wonderful time. An absolutely wonderful time. And the more justification you can arrive at, the better. And the more trouble you can make, the more people you can tell, calling up everybody, gossip, 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 the better. Oh, that's better. Ooh, that's wonderful. Let's spread it everywhere. This negative feeling. Let's get everybody involved. And the other one is saying, poor thing. Wonder what went wrong this morning. And drop it. Fear in people? Well, right. I hear you. All right. The question is, what about fear in other people? My friend, it is a true statement, and I would ask you to experiment with it. If you are in the presence of someone in a negative state, which is always fear, understand this. You have two choices, love or fear. You're either in the presence of love or you're in the presence of fear. In your terminology, you're either coming from love or coming from fear. Those are the options. In the presence of someone who is coming from fear, if you choose to open yourself up and just allow the energy to move, you will not be inundated and you will not be, what shall we say, polluted. In fact, you will discover a wonderful thing, that energy is energy, and unqualified energy is unqualified. If you qualify it as fearful, then it will respond in you as fear. But if you simply allow energy to move through you with that wonderful feeling of all life is just moving and flowing, and you're willing and ready to accept whatever comes, making no stipulation that only the best should come, only the good, only the happy, but just allowing life to flow, and you just simply participate in that flowing, you will learn that you do not have as much fear, and you just allow things to happen to you. If you have preconceived ideas of what you want life to bring you, then you're stuck. So in the presence of other people's fear, the greatest help you can do is to simply draw it off, put it through you, and go on with your business. No. No. But let me tell you something. It's not in vain. Giving love has to be done without any strings attached. To truly give love has to say, I'm giving it, and I don't care if anybody even feels it. But it is my nature to give it. It is a flower's nature to give off perfume. And it really doesn't matter if some nose is sticking there smelling it. Its nature is to give off the fragrance. And that's what it will do. And when you give off love in that same way, just because it is something you must do because it is your nature to do, be totally unconcerned if anyone else even understands or knows or cares, then you will be deeply within what I would call the rhythm of divine love. Don't worry about what happens. Just do what is natural to do.
Bartholomew, are you saying then if we look at the source of an evil energy and we do not recognize it as evil but strictly as energy, is this destroying the power of that evil energy to have any influence on us in any way? In other words,
I hear you, and the answer is yes. All right, but let me speak if I might. There is no such thing as evil energy. There is only energy that has been qualified. All right, and the thing that qualifies the energy is man's mind. So, if you begin to give up all of your preconceived ideas of what is good and evil, you see, when you begin to give away this not mine, not mine, one of the things you're going to run into is your wonderful belief structure. You believe certain things are good and certain things are bad. You do. Get down in there and you'll find them and they will lurk around. And as high and holy as you can, you're going to run smack into them. Those belief systems that say, this is wrong. And when you finally get down to it, the last one is going to be, murder is wrong. Murder is wrong. This is one of the great universal... I'm not talking about war, which you have already validated. I'm talking about murder. One-to-one murder is wrong. This is where you end up. All I can tell you is, if you begin to look through your own bag of beliefs, you're going to start running into all of these. And if you can just let them all go and quit qualifying all of this energy, you're going to find that the struggle is ceased in you. You see, the struggle that you have put upon yourself is this tremendously difficult thing of trying to make real an unreal situation. You are trying to make real the fact that you are separate, and the fact is that you are not. And that is the hardest thing that man is trying to do. He says, I am separate, and he accumulates all of this data to make sure. And all the time, wondrously flowing all around and about him like a wonderful sea, is all of this unity. And he is standing there screaming on top of his little rock, oh no, it's not like that, it's separation, I know it is, I know it is. And all around is all of this sea. And that rock that you're standing on is your beliefs. And if you start to look at them, you're going to erode away your rock and you're going to plop in the sea, and it is the truth. But you've got to do the eroding. It isn't going to dissolve. My friends, the sea cannot dissolve your rock. You've got to do it. That's your job. You're standing high and mighty, sure of your separation. All I can tell you is if you begin to unqualify all energy, no ideas of good or bad, I mean it, and you say to me, it is impossible, I say, try it, I don't think so. I don't think so. Remember, you can have one of two choices. You can be loving or you can be fearful. If you keep this in mind, you can easily decide which is what. If there is fear in you, my friends, guess what's in action? The only thing in you that fears is the ego, and it has every reason to fear, because it knows that it is a non-supportive system. It is not going to exist for very long. And the more serious you get about freedom, the more afraid your ego is going to become, and the more noise it is going to make. But the wonderful thing about that is, the more noise your ego makes, the easier it is to hear.
You spoke of murder, and if we truly see it truly, what can they take from you? They can only take this body. But what they are doing to themselves in the act of murder is a terrible load to carry.
If you can see with the eyes of compassion, my friend, you will see that in the case of murder, There is no response except deep, deep compassion. Not only for the tremendous amount of fog in the person's sleeping mind, but also in the pain and anguish within that being on awakening and finding what has happened. Murders are done through ignorance. What you call evil only works in ignorance. If one is in a state of knowing, those things do not happen. And to punish someone because they are ignorant does not help. And I realize that your whole society is based on a very definite structure. And I repeat to you, if you cannot step outside of the structure long enough, you will never be free. If you will continue to have your structure of who you will love and who you will hate, of who is good and who is evil, of what is good and what is evil, you will not find freedom.
It's ironic that our legal system recognizes that if the defendant did not know what he did at the time, he cannot be convicted of the crime. And yet, and this is true, he did not know what he was doing at the time, but he is convicted of the crime.
No one knows. Anything like that is done in England. I am trying to ask for the deepest amount of compassion possible in you. Compassion. Compassion. You cannot be compassionate if you have decided that someone is evil. That becomes pity and superiority and arrogance. That's not love. I know I'm asking all of it. I know. I'm asking to let it all go. Every bit of it. Nothing remains. I know that. And for those of you who say no, that's all right. But for those of you who say why not, then let's try it. Why not? Why not? But you cannot fall into oneness if you believe in evil. It is not possible.
As far as everybody being murderers, how does all this relate to plants, animals, and eating?
The truth of that is that in most of the kingdoms except man, there is a built-in desire to serve in whatever way is possible and useful. It is their nature. But things have gotten to such an unnatural state that no longer can it be said that an animal willingly lays down its life for your dinner table, because gluttony is so much the case, overextension of all eating habits, all out of proportion, tremendous waste constantly going on, that finally all of these other areas of awareness have the natural response that you would have if you were giving someone something and they kept misusing it and throwing half of it in the garbage. You'd say, enough. There was a time on your planet when all was in harmony, and it was all right. That is not the case anymore. The greed of man, in order to bloat his possessions, is so vast that the harmony is gone.
Are you suggesting that the food supply might then dwindle, if there isn't this harmonious relation?
You will make sure that it doesn't, won't you? Mankind goes through endless trouble to make sure that their bodies are well provided for. Well provided for. No, my point is this. I don't think that you need to concern yourself about that, because it's very difficult for you as a human energy field to project into the conscious awareness of the animal kingdom or the plant kingdom. I appreciate your concern. I feel that the proper response of a human to all of these kingdoms is with tremendous gratitude and equality of vision, which the human being rarely gives to other fields of understanding. After all, it was written in the Bible that you should be in charge, and you've been in charge ever since, in the wrong way. The proper attitude is perfect usage of and constant gratitude for those that give their lives to sustain your body. With that kind of attitude, harmony is present within you. And that is what I would suggest. But every time you misuse and throw away, the balance is disrupted. It is all a matter of balance. People are willing, vast energy fields are willing to sacrifice if it's useful. But the human kingdom is no longer being useful. The human kingdom has gone past that state and are in a state of gluttony. If you doubt it, look around your world. Gluttony. Not only in the eating, but in the possessions, in the money. Thoughts, look at these huge and wonderful billions and billions of dollars to educate people. Educate them to assimilate vast amounts of knowledge so they'll be ready for the next moment when their ego has to be very sure of its stand. That's what education is, you know. Accumulation of facts so that you have defended yourself against the next moment. If you didn't know anything, then you would be left with only one thing. Your intuitive response. We've gone on a long time. Yes. Last question. The question is, what in the education field should we be working toward? My friend, I won't go on too long. Perhaps sometime we should do, since so many are in that field. Perhaps sometime we should discuss education, but I would only say that to me, the sign of a real educator is one who knows that their students know as much as they do, that the facts are not important, but that the learning to go within and bring things out is important. You see, if you can teach a child that they have within them the resources, then come the moment when they say, I want freedom, they're going to go within. They're not going to go to a text. But if you continue to throw them back on the written word and completely ignore the inner response, which most faculty members do, you don't know anything, you be quiet, I'm talking, you shut up and listen to me. You see, the whole system is set up so that the authority figure is so pronounced. And so you have billions of people all over the globe utterly unsure about their own inner awareness, their own inner ability to solve anything, let alone the problem of freedom. They don't even know if they know how to add two and two without asking teacher if they know it's right. How then can you expect to have a world full of people strong enough of their own beliefs to be freedom bound? Impossible. And it starts in your education system. A good teacher strengthens within their students their inner worth, their inner reliability, their inner dialogue, their inner power. But the teacher is afraid to, because what happens if the student comes up with a different answer than theirs? Then where are you? Somebody's got to be right and somebody's got to be wrong. But the answer is that's not true. The biggest help as a faculty member that you can ever give is that wonderful feeling that they know there is a place they can go, and it's within. Constantly throwing them back upon themselves. Well, what do you think? Well, what are your feelings? Well, how do you feel about that? Well, you find out. Well, it's up to you. You. If you need to know, look within. Constantly throwing it back on. But that is not the way it's set up. There is the knower and the stupid. And it's the job of the knower to teach the stupid. And then they become very upset because the stupid don't like to be felt that they're stupid. So they rebel. And they say, this is stupid. And they call the teacher stupid. And the game is on. And then soon we don't know who is what. Throwing them back on their own inner mechanism to find truth within themselves in whatever way is meaningful is the greatest help. Because someday, when they are in extremity, they will go in the right place. Outward motion does not bring truth. Inward motion will. I've gone on much too long.
No, you haven't.
I thank all of you so much, especially those of you who have come for so far.
Thank you.